www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, and every second Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
You were a number, you weren't a name, you want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
Good evening and welcome to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Virginia and I'll be your host for today. On today's show, we are talking about hunger strikes in Canadian prisons. We have some new research to share and some audio from a few of the many hunger strikes over the past year. But first, some news. The Globe and Mail released an article on March 8th documenting sexual assault cases against guards employed by Correctional Services Canada. Most of the cases occurred at Nova Institution in Nova Scotia. The article demonstrates that CSC does not keep data on sexual assault complaints against guards in its employ. The article references Ivan Zinger, the correctional investigator, stating, quote, "Mr. Zinger said CSC's failure to collect sexual assault data amounts to further evidence that the agency is not taking the issue of assault seriously and that tracking allegations is essential to understanding the prevalence of the issue," end quote. The article also states, quote, "At the root of the problem, advocates say, is the power imbalance between guards and the prisoners and a reluctance by authorities to take allegations of abuse seriously," end quote. The STTIC section of the CSN, which is a workers' union here in Montreal, held a demonstration attended by about 30 people on Saturday, March 6th, outside of Bordeaux Prison. The union was demanding that prisoners receive priority for the COVID-19 vaccination and that their time in lockdown due to COVID-19 restrictions count as double time toward their sentences. This week, there was also a hunger strike launched by migrants held at the migrant prison in Laval to protest the conditions of the pandemic in that prison. We were lucky enough to receive an audio clip from a speech given at the STTIC CSN demonstration about the demands of the Laval hunger strikers. The hunger strike has since ended, but we wanted to share this audio anyways.
Une des personnes qui avait vécu la grève de la faim à la prison de Laval.
Ouais! Allô, bonjour tout le monde. Bonjour, merci de m'avoir. Moi, je suis Abdoul et je viens en tant que membre de Solidarité sans frontières aussi, en support à votre action, en support à tous ces efforts pour ces détenus qui sont maintenus dans ces conditions vraiment inacceptables et archaïques, que moi je trouve archaïques. C'est vrai que j'ai vécu cet univers carcéral, surtout au moment de la pandémie du COVID-19. On était, moi et mes camarades, au centre de Laval, centre de détention de Laval, et on a dû faire un mouvement de protestation, une grève de la faim, pour pouvoir contester les situations et les conditions de détention. Donc, on est ici pour support, mais c'est parce qu'on se retrouve dans ce même combat et que moi, dans ma situation, je peux même affirmer que ce qui se passe dans les centres de détention et dans les prisons, c'est vraiment inacceptable. Et il faut faire quelque chose pour ces gens-là parce qu'ils souffrent beaucoup. Je suis en rapport en ce moment même avec des gens, des détenus qui sont même au centre de détention en ce moment-là. Ils sont vraiment en danger et puis ils sont en contestation, tout comme nous tous. Et ils sont en grève de la faim. Ils ont même lancé une lettre aux médias que je voudrais bien partager avec vous tous, juste pour montrer que l'esprit est le même, cette revendication elle est la même, et puis ce danger il est pour tout le monde et c'est partout dans l'univers carcéral. Bon, ça c'est la lettre des détenus de qui font la grève de la faim, qui sont en mouvement de contestation au centre de détention de Laval. Ils disent nous sommes un groupe de migrants détenus au centre de détention de Laval. Par cette présente lettre, nous voulons d'une part dénoncer les conditions de détention dont nous faisons part, dans lesquelles nous sommes, les conditions dans lesquelles nous sommes détenus au centre de détention. Depuis un certain temps, le virus du Covid s'est introduit dans la prison. Les mesures sanitaires prises par les agents de l'immigration sont nettement insuffisantes. Certains des détenus ont déjà contracté le Covid. D'autres se plaignent de douleurs s'apparentant aux symptômes du Covid, mais ne reçoivent que de Tylenol. Nous souffrons beaucoup. Nous avons aussi été confinés dans les chambres séparées, mais nous recevons aucune assistance psychologique. Nous sommes désemparés et nous avons très peur pour notre santé. Selon nous, utiliser la déclaration comme politique d'immigration est de tout temps une mesure inhumaine et injustice, avec ou sans Covid. D'autre part, nous annonçons que nous allons commencer une grève de la faim à durée indéterminée à partir du 1er mars pour contester les traitements dont nous faisons l'objet. Nous demandons à être libérés du centre de détention car c'est un espace propice à la propagation du Covid. Et ce n'est qu'une question de temps avant que nous soyons tous contaminés. Ceci est un appel à l'aide. Nous voulons être traités avec dignité et surtout nous voulons bénéficier d'une protection comme tout le monde. Et ça a été signé par Marlon, Carlos, Martin, Raphaël, Merti, Alain, Karim et Freddy. C'était les détenus du centre de détention de Laval. Et merci encore et nous sommes tous avec vous en support à tous ces détenus. Merci.
That was audio from a speech that was given at a demonstration held in Montreal outside of Bordeaux prison about the demands of hunger strikers in the migrant prison in Laval. In mid-February, there was also a hunger strike launched at the Maplehurst Correctional Complex in Ontario. Prisoners demanded access to personal protective equipment and cleaning supplies, video visits, the end of frequent lockdowns, as well as access to adequate food, clean clothes, air ventilation, cleaning supplies, canteen access, and additional canteen options, and a greater number of phones to relieve tension and increase access to communication. The strike ended after about a week. On March 4th, the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project, along with hosts from the Criminalization and Punishment Education Project in Ottawa, held a press conference about the hunger strike in Maplehurst, even though it was already over. At the press conference, they shared audio from one of the people who had been on hunger strike in Maplehurst, and we wanted to share that audio with you now. Here is Sam, who is a prisoner incarcerated at Maplehurst Correctional Complex in Ontario, and this audio is from February 2021.
Guilty, and then await the results, which hopefully we hope will free us up. In the meantime, while we're waiting, we'd like to get programs. We'd like to get Yard, which we haven't got in over 2 months. We'd like to get treated fairly, like as if we were your sons. You know what I mean? As if we were members from your community. But it seems like anytime you're black, indigenous, and young, they can stall, they can speak to us any way they want, they can beat us up. You know what I mean? I don't know if the general public believes me, but it's happening. You know what I mean? And the courts are turning a willful blindness, a blind eye. You know what I mean? So, yeah, we push back. You know what I mean? When our civil liberties are not being adhered to, we push back. You know what I mean? Because that's what any intelligent person with a spine would do. You know what I mean? Is not let the government disrupt your life, right? Even though they like talking about what Saudi Arabia is doing and their human rights abuses, and they like talking about China, what they're doing, but they don't look in their own backyards. This is trying, man. Like, it's not like being at home. Like, I understand the general public is going to think, oh, they're just at home. No, we're not at home. You know what I mean? We're not around people that treat us fairly. You know what I mean? Our food is not adequate. You know what I mean? This is why we hunger strike. We don't want a hunger strike. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to deprive yourself of meals day in, day out, especially when you're under intense stress, right? And your phones are being charged extra money for phones, you know what I mean? The canteen, which we order once a week, that's being charged, you know what I mean? Like, we're paying exorbitant prices for that. And it's trying, man. You know what I mean? We're just waiting for our day in court, you know what I mean? And then we've been locked down 6 days. Great. No showers, no phone calls. Both of my sisters work at hospitals. You know what I mean? They're on the front line. I'm concerned that they're going to catch COVID. You know what I mean? And I'm concerned that I'm going to catch COVID. You know what I mean? And I'm concerned with the way that upper management is taking on their time with us.
That was audio from Sam, who is incarcerated at Maplehurst Correctional Complex in Ontario. In late February, Corey Cardinal, an Indigenous man incarcerated in a provincial prison in Saskatchewan, went on hunger strike again. This time, Cardinal was demanding that the government enact the calls to action from the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls Inquiry, and was demanding support specifically for the women detained at the Pine Grove Correctional Center. Cardinal has also started a fundraiser where he has been crowdfunding money for women imprisoned in Pine Grove in order to pay for basic necessities through the canteen and for phone calls to family. For those who followed the news back in early January, Cardinal was part of a wave of hunger strikers in Saskatchewan prisons back then, along with the women incarcerated at Pine Grove, who were protesting the lockdown conditions resulting from COVID outbreaks happening at provincial prisons in that province. We wanted to share audio of Cardinal, who calls in from time to time to the True North Radio Project. This piece is from December 26th, 2020, and is called Warrior Citizen Corey Cardinal Feels Optimistic as Solidarity Blossoms. It was aired right before the big coordinated hunger strikes in Saskatchewan Correctional Center and Pine Grove Correctional Center, where some prisoners stayed on hunger strike for up to 2 weeks. In the clip that follows, Cardinal talks with the True North radio host about the situation in the prison he is in.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm okay, you know, I'm optimistic.
Optimistic, yes, tell me.
I'm on a different unit. I'm on the same unit, and so they have put all the negative inmates, so there's a whole unit of us. And
all tested negative for COVID?
Mm-hmm, for
okay,
sure. So
okay.
We had a big meeting last night.
Yes.
We all stood in a circle in a impressive show.
Yes.
Of unification with the inmates. We stood in a circle here. Inmates that are white, native, black, we have on our unit, all came together.
Yes.
To answer the call from the overflow inmates that are on the hunger strike, that were on the hunger strike over there.
Yes.
So there was a lot of discussions because they sent a call to us for support. So along with the inmates in the Saskatchewan Penitentiary. So we were going to answer the call and show solidarity and support for the inmates in the pen and the inmates in the overflow with a hunger strike, right?
Yes.
So we discussed that, and we were talking to Sherry, and so she was talking to the inmates in overflow. So they've been on a hunger strike for the past, I think, 3-4 days systemic issues and stuff with the attitude toward the officers, towards the lack of respect and stuff. They weren't letting them outside, and there's inmates in there that were on quarantine for close to over a month, and they weren't seeing outside. So whatever their reasons were, we were gonna, you know, we were gonna answer. We answered their call, but since then, I guess they negotiated with the institution, and so they come to an agreement. So, like, we're talking about, you know, years of systemic oppression, you know, from the institutions, and I don't think people realize, you know, the depth of it, you know. And so I think the public needs to start listening to the inmates, for, you know, that been through this, and I think, you know, they're sick of it. They're absolutely sick of it. And, you know, they're not affecting just Aboriginals, which, you know, so that majority are incarcerated here. This is, you know, we're, you know, all people, all inmates are affected. So,
absolutely,
you know, there's no division. We're unified. We are unified now. You know, we all share the same cause. I think people are starting to understand the depth of this systemic oppression that's going on. In, you know, just this Bastion Correctional is a prime example of this. So, you know, it's a modern day oppression is what it is, right? Not just for Native people, for everybody.
Oh, and merely incarceration is really comes from the imagination of a colonial dominator class. And I mean, and I hear what you're saying, like I'm hearing that in the global solidarity too against this just, a constant permanent oppression.
For sure.
Yeah.
So I've been like, you know, I've been working for years now, and like I've been putting together things, you know, that they've been just progressively taking away from us. Brad Wall introduced prison reform. I don't think people understand that, right? So he introduced prison reform. And since that, he reformed prison based on a tough-on-crime agenda supported by a prejudiced voter base.
Yeah.
And so since his premiership, they've introduced privatization of the food by Compass as a cost-effective way to feed us. They introduced a privatized phone company, Telmate, which preys on vulnerable families through commission kickbacks and overpriced fees. So they took away our clothes, which reduced our individualism. They took our mail, our ability to associate, which violates our Charter of Rights freedom. They took away our dollar a day. They took away, they're just in a steady progressive eradication of our rights. And I think the inmates here are seeing the context of that. The general public, you know what, they need to understand that this is a progressive eradication of our rights. You know, just that one, just by restricting our mail, you know, to our families and other institutions, you know, that violates our charter rights to associate, you know, and introducing overpriced canteen and stuff creates division, creates a stingy atmosphere, and pits inmates against inmates, and so they exploit each other for noodles kind of ships, right?
Right.
You know, so it's, you know, it's just old colonial structures of division that, you know, that are prevalent.
That was a re-air from True North Radio. You can check out their YouTube channel at True North Radio. As some of our podcast listeners might remember, we spoke to journalist Abby Stadnick back in January about the hunger strikes in the prairies and resulting solidarity actions outside prison. Here is that interview for our radio listeners. First, can you start off by introducing yourself for our listeners?
Sure. My name is Abby Stadnick, and I am a journalist, a contributing writer to Perilous Chronicle, which is an outlet that takes account of all of the prisoner actions that are taking place across North America.
So you recently wrote a long article for Perilous about all of the different things that have been happening in jails and prisons throughout Saskatchewan. And I'm curious if you could start off by walking us through a timeline of the resistance in Saskatchewan jails and prisons and when that got started and kind of like what's been happening a bit.
For sure. So there was a hunger strike or a series of hunger strikes that started at the beginning of January, but actually the resistance goes back further than that, in the sense that one of the main organizers, Corey Charles Cardinal, who's incarcerated at the Saskatoon Correctional Center, he was writing to the Minister of Corrections, Public Safety and Policing in Saskatchewan, Christine Tell. He was writing to her in November, talking about the overcrowded conditions in Saskatoon Correctional, talking about the high rates of, Saskatchewan has the highest rates of HIV and sort of increased vulnerabilities to COVID because of those pre-existing health conditions. He was talking, writing letters to her, talking about how they didn't have appropriate PPE or cleaning supplies, how a number of sort of horrific examples of how they didn't have, you know, he wasn't able to access a mop or he wasn't able to access masks and that sort of thing. So he wrote her a number of letters, received no response. And then, of course, there was an outbreak, COVID outbreak at the Saskatoon Correctional Center. The number of people, it's escaping my mind right now, but I think at its height was around 146, mostly prisoners, but also some staff. So that outbreak happened after basically sounding the warning alarm that Corey did through his letters and his advocacy. And so that outbreak happened. And then in late December, Corey was again writing to the minister and asking for an apology and also the resignation, an apology from the government of Saskatchewan for failing to prevent that outbreak in late November, early December, and then calling for an apology as well as the resignation of the minister for that negligence. So that was the hunger strike that happened early January. It was people engaged in it to various lengths, but Corey and a core group of people were on hunger strike for 5 days in Saskatoon Correctional. There's also a group of women at Pine Grove Correctional, which is in Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, who were on hunger strike until just a couple of days ago. So that was, I believe, 15 or 16 days of hunger strike there for those women.
And you did write about an incident where some prisoners in one of the, I think, the provincial jails in Saskatchewan set fire to some things in their cells and maybe broke some stuff. Is that... I know the news was reporting that as unrelated to COVID, but in your article, you were like, I suspect this is very related. Can you talk a bit about that incident?
Yeah, for sure. So my main source of information for that incident comes through Beyond Prison Walls Canada. And so the woman who runs that group has been in touch with a lot of prisoners throughout Saskatchewan. And so her view was that, yes, you know, yes, certainly that riot at Prince Albert Correctional, that was related to COVID. I mean, they hung a sheet out of the window that said we're getting treated like animals. And I mean, we know the conditions were bad in jails across the province. So after the fact, officials tried to say that it was gang related and that it wasn't related to COVID. But I feel like the sheet hanging out the window pretty much says that it's about, you know, it's about treatment of prisoners and it's about prison conditions.
So That's a lot of different tactics. That's like people writing to ministers and demanding, you know, conversations, and then taking it to a hunger strike that goes for 5 days in some places and, you know, almost 2 weeks in other places. That's people rioting in a jail. Is there anything I'm missing in terms of stuff that was happening on the inside in the period of time from like early November to, you know, a couple days ago?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, the writing piece is interesting. One of the things that Corey and other lead organizers were able to do through writing letters was then to galvanize other folks inside to write their own letters. And so I think I mentioned this in the article that there were about 10 letters that were written by people in both Saskatoon Correctional and Pine Grove, the women's jail, that were sent to the government, which is, from what I understand, is pretty unprecedented to have that kind of, well, I wouldn't say unprecedented, but it's unusual in the sense to be able to sort of have a coordinated kind of letter writing campaign that's happening from inside, because of course we know it's hard to organize inside, and especially the way that prisons work to break down communication between people and between people who are trying to organize things. So I think that's kind of an impressive, unique aspect of this is the way that writing was used. And then also, Corey Cardinal had a piece published in Briar Patch, and outside advocates were part of getting that piece published, and that was released on the day that the hunger strike began. So there was a lot of different strategies used, and then also building relationships with a coalition of folks on the outside who then did their own hunger strike, one-day hunger strike in support of people inside, and as well as a day of action on January 6th, I believe, and that involved, you know, calling politicians, doing the hunger strike, various other kind of educational, self-education actions. So yeah, a lot of different, like you say, tactics, and by different people and across multiple institutions. And then people on the outside and in multiple cities as well. So it was pretty impressively coordinated, especially because Corey got moved to the hole before the hunger strike even started. So, and I keep mentioning him because he really has done, I mean, over the years, he's done a lot of advocacy work for prisoners. He runs a group, Inmates for Humane Conditions, and does a lot of talk and mobilizing people around conditions inside. So I want to give credit to him for the work that he's done in terms of educating and mobilizing people.
Can you share, or do you know any updates about his situation? I know a lot of people had heard that he had been put in solitary confinement as soon as the hunger strike started, but is there any updates in terms of like where he's at these days?
Yeah, he's still there in segregation. So we'll see. I know he's pushing back against that and is in touch with people who can help him push back against that, because really they have no grounds to have put him in segregation, right? It was always, I mean, I'm sure they can always kind of manufacture grounds to put someone in segregation, but really there's nothing. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, it's been 21 days, quite a while. Dana Blackie, who is also mentioned in the article, he was moved as well. So, I mean, basically the strategy, of course, is to divide kind of the leaders or the people who are mobilizing others.
In the article, you mentioned a lot of the actions that have happened on the outside. Do you want to talk about those a little bit more? It seemed like there were even demonstrations happening outside of some jails in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, in Regina, in particular, a group of Indigenous women whose sons and grandsons, family members were incarcerated in Regina Correctional, where at the time there was a current outbreak. And so they were gathering outside the correctional. They sang and they danced in support of the men inside, and that some of the men inside could see them and were really emboldened and pleased to see the support of their families outside. Really beautiful sort of approach, I think, to resistance. So that was happening in Regina at the same time as there was an active outbreak. And then one of the women connected in with that group of folks was also connected in with the open letter that was written by a group of advocates that was signed by over 1,600 people and over 40 or close to 40 organizations and groups. One of the women Indigenous woman took that letter to Parliament in Regina on, I can't remember the day, but hand-delivered it, asked for the Minister of Corrections, Christine Tell, to be there. Christine Tell refused to be there, but the justice critic, NDP MLA, Nicole Sauer, agreed to meet this grandmother and receive the letter. And then, of course, Minister Tell released a statement after the fact, and then Scott Moe, the premier, was tweeting about it, and just some really gross, you know, some really gross stuff coming from the, sorry, that's not a very intelligent way of putting it, but just some really gross stuff about, like, criminals, and we need to keep criminals locked up, and just this kind of ignorant, I don't think they actually even engaged with the points in the open letter. I mean, the open letter was calling for release of as many people possible, and as a lawyer and others noted afterwards, there are so many people in Saskatchewan and elsewhere, but in Saskatchewan in particular, on remand, which of course, remand meaning that they haven't, I mean, technically they're innocent, right? And so the open letter in part was calling for the release of people on remand, not exclusively, but certainly for people on remand. And so for the government to respond and say, you know, we refuse to release criminals who have been, you know, charged with this and that, I mean, it just shows sort of a lack of understanding even of that basic sort of composition of who's actually in their jails. So pretty ignorant response, but I think the Coalition of Advocates was pleased with the huge support from the community, and, you know, not just in the prairies, but across Canada, and also more broadly, that so many people signed on in such a short period of time, and that one of the calls to action was an abolitionist impulse towards imagining a world and moving towards a world beyond prisons. And so I think the Coalition of Advocates is pretty heartened to know that many people signed on to a document that is looking to move beyond the current system of control and containment and towards a different imagining of what accountability and safety might look like.
Yeah, it really feels like we're in a moment when a lot more people are thinking about and open to prison abolition, especially. I think coming out of like movements that, you know, moved a bit north from the States around police abolition this summer, and people thinking a lot more about that phrase and what that means. Have you noticed other ways that has come up in the organizing that you've been reporting on?
I think there's been an attention, I'm thinking here specifically of the letter to advocates that Corey Cardinal published in Briar Patch, and the way that he talks there in that letter about the prison system as a continuation of genocide against Indigenous peoples. I feel like there's a growing understanding on the prairies of that reality, and of the fact that an anti-colonial abolitionist perspective understands that Indigenous peoples are sovereign nations with their own justice traditions, legal orders, etc., and really turning to look at that and to respect that. I feel like there's more attention and openness to that now, and to understanding that anti-colonial aspect, and that it's not just about systemic racism within the prison system, but that the prison system is a colonial imposition on Indigenous peoples.
Have there been more responses from the government since that first round, or that's kind of been it?
No, that's been it. Just Scott Moe's ignorant tweet and Christine Tull's statement. And then they didn't respond in any way to all of the, as far as I have heard, they didn't respond in any way to all of the letters that were sent by individual prisoners.
In your reporting, you talk to prisoners, you talk to family members of prisoners, you talk to a whole lot of different people, and I'm curious if you can share, you've shared some of them, but if you have other stories that came up in your reporting that really stuck with you that you'd like to share more about.
I think, I mean, talking to Carrie Auger was really meaningful. So Carrie Auger is part of Freelance Free Peoples, which is an Indigenous-led abolition group on the prairies, and so I think Carrie was part of organizing the actions on the outside, and I think and coming from a place specifically rooted in, you know, respect for and understanding of Cree Indigenous understandings of relationality and relational accountability, and what our responsibilities are to our relations, and that's not obviously just like biological relations, but relations more broadly in terms of our relatedness to all beings. And I think talking with her was really illuminating in the sense that she's, you know, she's constantly coming back to this idea of, yeah, the relational obligation that people on the outside have to people on the inside, and how we, through our actions and solidarity and what we do on the outside, how that is part of fulfilling our relational obligations. And I mean, I've had many conversations with Corey Cardinal over the last month and have heard about, you know, his concerns. Even though the hunger strike is over, he has larger concerns. He's very interested in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's calls to action, specifically around justice. And he's very interested as well in the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls report and the calls to action there. And so he's thinking quite broadly in terms of how those calls to action have not been taken up or heeded in a lot of ways by governments. And so I think he's turning now to think about how to raise the profile of those calls to action. I think he was particularly concerned by stories he was hearing about women and the experience of women in Pine Grove and the racism, sort of blatant racism that women were experiencing. I mean, I think that's pretty ubiquitous, from my understanding, is pretty ubiquitous blatant racism in these institutions. But yeah, the women were certainly calling attention to that through their hunger strike.
You just gave us a piece of this, but do you have a sense of what else is coming up in terms of, you know, supporting prisoners in Saskatchewan and groups that are operating kind of across the prairies more broadly?
It will be interesting to see how things continue to develop, because I think there's energy now on the inside to continue action, and it's not just limited to COVID, right? I mean, as we know, COVID sort of illuminates or heightens the conditions and the realities that are always present in prisons, sort of the profound injustice of prison as an institution in and of itself, and COVID just shines a spotlight on that. And so it will be interesting to see how people inside continue to develop their analysis and their actions to support sort of a larger critique, or an ongoing critique, I guess, of prison.
In reporting on people who are doing prisoner support, as well as like reporting on the situation that prisoners are facing, I'm wondering if you've come across advice for people on the outside about doing prisoner support, and ways that journalism is one way to do a lot of support for people on the outside. I think there's often like a difficulty that people have getting their voices heard from within the prison walls. But do you have other ideas or ways that you think that people who are looking for something around prisoner support, around abolition, to get involved in right now, like things that they should be looking for?
So there's lots of great resources in terms of educational resources for people if they're at that stage of, well, we're all at that stage of sort of continually learning. But noprisons.ca, a fantastic website that has a bunch of resources that people can check out. There's a bunch of sort of abolition 101, that sort of thing, that can really break down some of the common questions that people have and answer those. So educational sites like that are specifically coming from the context of so-called Canada, I think, are important for people to access. And then there's been a number of fundraising initiatives, certainly to support prisoners. Certainly there was one in the prairies. It's now not operational, but there is a continuing one out east in Toronto that's a prisoner support fund. And I think they've got a ton of applications from prisoners who are looking for support. And so they're looking for, I don't know, I think it's over $100,000 that they still need to raise. Like, it's quite a bit of money that they still need to raise in order to be able to support all of the people who've applied for stipends. I can't remember exactly how much the stipends are. I think they were $200 a person, but basically it's for recently released or currently incarcerated folks, and it's to help with those sort of basic necessities that people need during this time. I mean, I don't know if a lot of people know that people inside have to buy their own at least this is the way it is on the prairies, have to buy their own, you know, toothpaste and buy their own, right? Like, you have to buy all of those things. Phone calls are incredibly expensive. They're run through predatory phone companies. In the prairies, it's Telmate, which is an American company. Out east, it's Bell Media. But I mean, so Telmate, for example, the money goes to an American company and rips off prisoners who, by and large, are poor people, and rips off families. And so anyway, there's an incredible need for kind of basic support of people inside. And then people who are recently released in the time of COVID who don't have access to some of the supports that they might otherwise have had access to. So I know, again, speaking from the prairie context, like lots of organizations, like nonprofit organizations, aren't able to operate in the way they were able to operate before, or medical clinics or what have you. And so if people are released, I mean, in regular circumstances, they're released with very little support. But now in the time of COVID, it's even worse. Like, I don't know how people do it, how they get out and how they survive, because there's so little support. So yeah, I mean, I think the financial piece is really important. It's a really simple sort of way for people who do have means to support. And then in terms of the larger question about supporting prisoners, I mean, I just feel like it's really important to listen to what prisoners are saying. So those who are able to get their voices out, like Corey or like the other prisoners who wrote letters that were publicized in some media sources, to really listen to what people are saying. Obviously, they know the conditions inside best, and we need to listen to what they have to say and honor that experience and follow their lead. I mean, that's why Corey published his letter in Briar Patch. It's like a letter to advocates to say, like, this is what's going on, and like, this is what I'm calling on you to, I think he says, like, include us in your model of humanity.
I always try and end interviews by asking people if they had things that they wanted to talk about that I didn't ask about. So is there anything I missed? Is there anything that you wanted to add?
I will just reiterate what I said before about the story. I mean, and I'm guilty of this too, although hopefully we'll remedy it, but like the story of the women and women's specific concerns, I think needs to have more attention paid to it. I was talking to one of the folks at Perilous Chronicle, and he was saying that, yes, I mean, by and large, their stories are about men usually. So it's not, you know, this isn't a unique situation in which the story of women gets buried and the story of men gets elevated. And so I think it's just important. Women have different conditions that they're dealing with inside. The abuses are different, although, you know, related and overlapping, but I think it's important for us to spend more time listening to the women.
That was journalist Abby Stadnick talking to us about hunger strikes that occurred in January this year at various prisons in Saskatchewan and resulting solidarity actions. All this talk of hunger strikes got us curious about just how many hunger strikes have happened in Canadian prisons since the start of the pandemic. March 10th, 2020 was the last time we were able to be at CKUT's station, and the pandemic set in quickly after that. In the year that has passed since, we have counted 21 hunger strikes at 16 different prisons and jails across the country. 6 prisons have seen more than one hunger strike, as prisoners endure extended lockdowns and restricted access to family and support as the pandemic drags on. Though prisoners and outside advocates called for decarceration in the face of COVID-19, provincial governments and the Correctional Services of Canada have not listened. Many people have been left to languish behind prison walls in the last year, cut off from support and information about the spreading virus. While outside sources have been tracking the number of COVID infections in prisons, fewer sources have been tracking prisoner resistance. The Perilous Project, which our last interviewee talked about, has tracked some resistance, but we decided to do our own research. As we said, there have been at least 21 hunger strikes in Canadian prisons and jails between March 10th, 2020 and March 11th, 2021. This does not include actions that are not hunger strikes, of which there have also been many. Conservatively, we estimate that there have been at least 650 prisoners who have participated in hunger strikes, many of them in more than one hunger strike. We have compiled audio from a couple more hunger strikes to share with you today in order to remember the strikes of the last year. This first clip is from day 5 of the first hunger strike of the pandemic, which was undertaken by migrant prisoners at the Laval migrant prison outside of Montreal. Their strike lasted 8 days. Here is that audio from March of 2020.
It's our fifth day today. It's getting very hard, but we're still holding. We're still fighting for our rights and fighting for each other. We're just asking to be considered as anybody else, as decent human beings, and protect us, especially like from the virus, because we feel very, very exposed and in danger in this detention center, where the measures that they took are not enough according to our view and according to what we know about the virus and what the doctors said. We're still on it. We're hoping that finally now people are going to react and help us with the situation. And yeah, thank you everybody for your support. Cette grève, on l'a faite après multiples tentatives de parler aux autorités, spécialement aux agents de l'immigration, que cette situation-ci qu'on vit et puis ce regroupement qu'on vit représente un danger dans le cadre de la pandémie du coronavirus. Et malgré les mesures prises qui sont une distanciation de 1 mètre, nous estimons que c'était pas assez et qu'on est tous confinés dans le même endroit et puis qu'on est tous aussi exposés. Donc on demandait à un changement radical des conditions et puis qu'on voulait être confiné comme les médecins l'ont recommandé, être confiné personnellement chez nous en attendant que la crise se calme.
The final hunger strike related clip we have to share with you all is from a prisoner in Barton Jail in downtown Hamilton, Ontario. The first hunger strike in Barton started on June 19th, 2020. This clip was recorded during that strike.
My name is Jeremy Hall. I'm an HWDC on 2B and a 22-hour lockup. I'm in the sixth day of a hunger strike. I'm on strike demanding better living conditions for all clowns across the province.
The access to health care programs and decent food and the excessive prices on canteen and phone bills needs to go. I'm tired of big businesses giving kickbacks to CSE so that they can take advantage of a captive market. Enough is enough. The unsanitary living conditions in these places is ridiculous. The lack of visits and the lack of access to our mail needs to stop. We need to oust the draconian thinking of CSE and usher in a fresh view with an accountable leadership.
That was audio of a prisoner in Barton Jail from June 19th, 2020. There is currently another hunger strike underway at Barton, which is the 21st strike of this past year. You can visit north-shore.info to learn more about how to support the strikers. Demonstrators in Hamilton also protested outside the Barton Jail this past weekend, demanding support for the hunger strikers and also making connections with Greek revolutionary prisoner Dimitris Koufoutinas. Koufoutinas, who is part of the left revolutionary organization 17th November, has been on a hunger strike of his own since January 8th. In the end of February, Koufoutinas began to refuse water as well. In retaliation, the government approved the prison to begin force-feeding him. Koufoutinas has been in prison for 19 years and was recently transferred to a higher security prison. He is demanding transfer back to the lower security prison where he was imprisoned before his transfer. Anarchists and other radicals in Greece and around Europe have been demanding and rioting in support of Koufoutinas for months now, to no avail. We are going to wrap up the show with some musical requests from a listener on the inside named Christoph. Here is Styles P, Send a Kite, and Boozy Badass with The Rain.
Real shit, nigga. I mean, my niggas don't really visit each other or none of that when they go in. Call none of that. Tell you some shit a couple of my niggas told me.
You ain't gotta drive up and sit behind the table. You ain't gotta drop money if you ain't able.
I'm not afraid to
vision. I don't need a visit, cause I don't need a nigga. I'm not a needy nigga. And if I'm in, it's my fault that I wowed out. I got too greedy, nigga. I be on the pull-up ball, eating soup at the greens of the boulevard. So I don't need the hood involved. I'll be home in a minute, getting dome in a minute. In the whip, on home in a minute. Throwing zones in a minute, have my own in a minute. So I only use the phone for a minute. Tell my niggas write kites and just send a little love. And throw love to the parties with the honeys and the thugs in it.
You ain't gotta drive up and sit behind the table. You ain't gotta drop money if you ain't able.
Up, but don't visit, cuz I'ma be in the hole for fucking up niggas. No blood shit, no crip shit, but I'ma flip the script on the day I get convicted. Bounce with the ops till they take me out of pop. No, I got a G.O. Wild out, throw a shit back on the C.O. Hard as a rock, fuck around. Gotta do the whole bit of the box. Fuck around. Fuck the cops, I'ma diss them. But tell my hood niggas I'ma miss them. Hold it tight so they don't lose me in the system. Yeah, I don't need money, just a little love and a letter. I'll survive, get struggle, get better.
You ain't gotta drive up and sit behind the table. You ain't gotta drop money if you ain't able.
Don't visit it. I ain't trying to call, so I don't need the digits. If I got myself in the shit, get myself out of it. Just be booking it, barring it, showering it. I don't need your currency. I ain't trying to complain, cause you ain't see me currently. You should be outside with a big face, hundreds be. Just write a kite and tell them niggas on the block that they'll always be under me.
You ain't gotta drive up and sit behind the table. You ain't gotta drop money if you ain't able.
Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
In my feeling.
Dirty system try to hit me with the needle, man. Always losing my people, man. Deceitful, man. Take your boys back to beefing, man. And this when you try to lead the game. Close friends in the grave, I seen a stinking rain. Stick your needles in my body, diabetes, man. The struggle of a young hustler, I could teach it, man. Cancer in and out my body, I could breathe again. I seen chains so tight on my wrist, they bled on me. Brought OG in my circle for him to tell on me. They say my best friend murder bought the feds on me. Cause he was getting them for the low, now he dead on me.
Rest in peace, love. The rain Man.
And the rain comes down so hard.
In my life.
My God.
In my life.
The rain comes down so hard.
Man.
Try to lead a state, stay away from drama. Still on parole, fake cases from your baby mama. Lost trail mama, that was my right hand. Lost my auntie Keisha, I need a mama sing. Praying, why my family, we in the rain again. Dude ain't finished his 10, G money back again. Maybe it's cause I was seeing, but we was raised to win. Bronson won't do that whole 10, I've been getting it in. Been crossed by niggas that hurt my heart like kidney stones. I got some henchmen gone, have my kidney gone.
You ain't no nigga. You ain't no nigga.
And the rain comes down so hard. Oh my God, why my rain comes down so hard
all the time in my life.
My God,
my God,
you know my rain comes down so hard. The rain come down hard as a motherfucker,
don't it?
He saved our life, God a motherfucker,
don't.
Didi's sister book, she called me Lil brother. 6-year-old shot by cops, ripped him up with cutters. This my state, and guess what? He with my skin color.
He was white.
Look like going to that place, fucked up my friends.
Huh? She was right.
Seen envy hit my clique, I had to sit and suffer. And still be threatened to go to court by my kid's mother. This a real struggle. On death row, I slept in water puddles. Heat so bad, it was scorch, your brother. Front page of the newspaper, Angola, where the thugs go. King of all this rap shit, but I can't get no cover though.
But if that won't stop my hustle though.
In my feelings, nigga. We in the yo live, nigga. You hear the jury.
You're listening to a pre-recorded episode of the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at www.ckut.ca. You can check out past episodes of the Prison Radio Show at prisonradioshow.libsyn.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're at Prison Radio Show. The Prison Radio Show airs twice a month on CKUT. We're on the air the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Friday, March 26th at 11 a.m. If you have any questions about anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. If you are in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. You can also write to us. You can address the envelope to The Prison Radio Show, or simply write PRS, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, and the postal code is H3A2B3. That's it for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah Day, recording from home on March 11th, 2021. On tonight's show, my guests, Patrick Lloyd Brennan and Holly Greco of Quebec Drama Federation.
English theater in Quebec is more than what we see on our stages. It really is a community. It's a way for us to gather.
We've watched folks, you know, toy and tinker and see what works for theater. And is it the same? Is it something new? Is it just a carbon copy of film that we're not achieving really at a high level, you know? Like, it's and it'll change depending on who you're talking to, which is also a really remarkable thing.
Mireille Camier and Jean-François Boisvenu of Théâtre Periscope.
How could we know that in March 2021 people will still want to go on the web? I don't know. And would they still, would the theaters be open? So it was a very hard year for those kind of decisions. We, all the artists, had to find those decisions of what should we plan.
And Emily Ruest and Camille Struli of Festival Bouge d'ici and Mainline Theatre.
It's out.